for those of us who have been coming to church over these last many weeks, it would be almost impossible not to notice that Swami Kriyananda, who's actually written Rays of the One Light that we read from every Sunday, has chosen this same topic now week after week. A couple of weeks ago, it was Moses brought truth, Moses brought the law, Jesus came with truth and grace. And today, this whole topic of can we understand God by thinking or by knowing? And every week now for a while, that's been the topic. Not that this whole subject of the mind versus the heart isn't throughout all spiritual teaching. Of course it is. It's the big challenge of being on the spiritual path. For once in our life, we're being invited to get out of our minds. And in fact, we're being instructed that it's the only way that we're actually going to ever find exactly what it is that we think we want, is to really expand beyond mind. So when I was thinking about this yesterday after I read the reading, I did what any forward-thinking, up-to-date minister would do in Palo Alto, California, and I Googled Jesus. And it was very interesting. And then I Googled Moses. And then I Googled Jewish law. And I, who actually was born Jewish and insisted on an Orthodox Jewish home when I was young, which I think I've told all of you before, really clearly searching for something, but I don't think my consciousness was anywhere near expanded enough at that time to know what it was, but I was hungry, and that I knew. So interestingly, I'm just realizing it as I'm speaking now, I insisted that we keep two sets of dishes in the house because Jewish people never mix milk with meat, and that we change our dishes at Passover, and I went to synagogue all of the time. I was searching. Well, yesterday in my Google search, I found out that there were, you know, we always hear about the Ten Commandments. Moses went up on Mount Sinai and he came down with the Ten Commandments, and they're good commandments. Thou shalt not lie, they shouldn't steal, don't covet thy neighbor's wife, and all of the Ten Commandments. But he came down with 613 laws. That's a lot of laws. When I studied and looked at Buddhism, I decided I couldn't do it because there was 8 of this and 4 of that, and it just boggled my mind, really. Way too intellectual for me. Then I find out that the very religion that I was trying to be so deeply involved in had 613 of them. Now, you have to realize at that time, not only were there 613 laws, but there were probably thousands of rabbis sitting around trying to interpret those laws and discuss those laws. And believe me, after having been born and raised in a Jewish home, they were fighting about the laws. They didn't just all immediately agree on what everything meant. It was fascinating realizing this yesterday. It gave me a headache, really. Now, some of the laws were really wonderful. The first law was, know that there is a God. The second law, know that there's only one God. The third law, worship that God. And many of the laws, I think 1 through 10, were pretty much like that. And then, of course, there's, they get into don't lie, don't steal. Nice laws, good laws. We'd all want to live by them. And then it's like, don't worship a smooth stone. You know, men should never wear women's clothes. There are a minimum of 20 laws about who you can and cannot have sex with. And you realize how hard it must have been to understand and follow all of these laws. But you know, at the time, as we've all heard now many, many times, the Jews were just coming out of slavery. It's hard to imagine the Jewish people enslaved, but they were for centuries. They were enslaved at the time that Moses came by the Egyptians, and prior to that, the Romans. And Moses, of course, came and he brought the Jews out of slavery. And as Asha said just a few weeks ago in a sermon that she gave, they needed laws. I don't know that they needed 613 of them, but, you know, who am I to say? That's what Moses came with. Some of the laws are a little questionable. There's a law that says, thou shalt rest on the first day of Passover. How many people in this room have ever been to a Seder on Passover? There is no rest around a Seder on Passover. There's a lot of cooking and serving and cleaning to be done. So I don't really understand all of them. But I know that at the time, they probably needed those laws. They didn't know how to live freely. They didn't know how to be on their own. So they needed them. But then the problem is that they got confused. They began to think, as Swamiji has said, that the path was the goal. They really felt that if they could get all of those laws down perfectly, which of course was impossible because the rabbis couldn't even agree on what was perfect, but if they tried to live by every one of those laws, then they would be doing God's will, and God would come and God would bless them. And they felt something that many Jewish people are still, of course, being taught today, that because they were living perfectly by the law, that they were God's chosen people, as if God could have a chosen people. We say every week in our festival, your chosen people have always been those of every race and nation who with deep love choose thee. We know that to be true. But the Jewish people really got confused about it, so they decided that they would live by every law to the letter. It was a very intellectual and heady approach because we were looking at a whole people evolving. That's where they were at the time. They were not ready yet to be able to perceive the greater or a greater spiritual reality. But they were a good people. One of the laws is, thou shalt say the Shema 3 times a day. Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. They were on the right path, but they were on the path. And the problem is, like so many times in life, they thought they were there. So Jesus came, and Jesus said to them, you're missing the point here. You've put this law so high. You're trying so hard to live by these written words that even your rabbis don't understand, that you've lost the love of God. You've lost what was the whole point of all of these laws. The point of the laws was not for you to have outer intelligence, wasn't for you to look outside and learn. The point of the law was to help show you how to come inside and find the divine within, where he resides in each one of us. That's all these laws were meant to do. But of course, the Pharisees, and Swamiji puts it so beautifully, he says they were intellectually hair-splitting, which is what they were doing. That was what they were doing. That was their job of the day. That was their full-time job. They were going to sit around and interpret the laws. But it took them into their mind, and it took them away from their heart. And so that even literally, when their greatest prayer was to know God, when God himself came right to them, and he stood right in front of them, and he said, here I am. They couldn't see him. They did not have, as he said, ears to hear or eyes to see. God himself appeared to the Jewish people, and they simply didn't know it. Now, I started realizing yesterday, it's no different, of course, than how we are, than how we're living. We're each on our own path. We are wherever we are on our path. And whether it's those 613 laws or rules, or whether it's the rules that we've come up with for ourselves that have sidetracked us from knowing God in our hearts, from being able to practice devotion, it doesn't really matter. The truth is, we're sidetracked. We think that if we, whatever, make a great business, get the right college degree, learn the rules of how to be a good person. We're taught from the time we're little children to say please and thank you and even to treat people well. Somehow we get as confused as the Jewish people were, thinking that if we get all of that all right, that we will have the love of God. And it's so misguided, but it's so entrenched that it's very hard to make that U-turn and go back inside to find what it is we're looking for. I know, and I've watched so much of how this is manifested in my own life, and of course still manifests in my own life. Would that I could practice the presence of God every moment, but I do have an understanding that that's what I want to be doing. But as many of you know, I'm a physician. I went through Stanford Medical School, and the stories that have evolved through my work are precious. They're precious not because they're about me. None of these stories are about me. And it's important that we all know that. But they're precious because I feel in my life, Divine Mother appeared one day, picked me up, took me in her loving arms, and dropped me off at Stanford campus. It was the most unlikely thing in the world that I would go to Stanford Medical School, but there I was. It was guided. That's really what I want to say. So none of this is about Shanti, but here I was. I met one of the finest medical or finest academic institutions in the world, where the mind and knowledge and facts are worshipped. That's what's worshipped there. The more you know, the better you are. And what is entrenched in our minds is that the more you know, the better doctor you'll be. I remember one time when I was taking an exam. You can't fathom the number of facts that we had to learn. It was ridiculous. It was just ridiculous. And one time I was saying to myself, why do we have to memorize all this? Like, we'll never have access to these books again or the computer again. Why does it have to be up here that we would sit for hours and take these exams? But it never quite made sense to me. And then but I did well. I thrived there and I flourished there and I was respected there. And then I went out into the world and I actually started practicing medicine. And I knew, even when I was in medical school, but I knew the more I practiced medicine, that all of that knowledge is wonderful. Just as Swamiji said in the reading today, Jesus wasn't against people learning. He wasn't against them learning these laws and trying to live by them. He was against him worshiping the laws. He was saying to them, you won't find God when you're just worshiping these laws. You can't really treat patients when you're just worshiping the knowledge that you have. So one day, I was in my practice. Some of you have heard this story, but there's so many stories. This just telling. And I had seen probably 26 people that day. Both of my partners were out of town. And when I went in to see the last patient, 26 or 27, I stopped at the door going into the room, and I said, Divine Mother, you need to do this. You need to come in. You need to see this patient. You have to guide me. I'm exhausted. I'm going to miss something important if you're not with me. And we walked into the room, and it was a 90-some-year-old man who was the father of one of the nuns who ran the hospital that I worked in. And she and her sister were there. And he was this gruff old man, and he told me right away, he was a patient of one of my partners, I haven't been in to see Dr. St. Martin in 10 years at least. I never come to the doctor. I have a little back pain. Just give me some medicine. So I said, okay, why don't you tell me about your back pain? There's nothing to tell you. I just have back pain. I said, I need just to hear a little more, like where, how long. So he tells me that he's had this back pain, came on the night before, very severe. And his daughter says to me, it was so severe that it actually made him sick to his stomach. And I'm listening to this story, and right away I'm just getting this feeling that something's terribly wrong here. I didn't know anything. It just felt like something was wrong. So I said to him, I'm going to leave the room. You're going to get undressed. I'm going to come back and examine you. I'm not getting undressed. And his daughters are there saying, Dad, you're going to get undressed. So I left the room, and I stopped on the way back in, and I said, Divine Mother, you diagnosed this man. Something's going on here. And nothing. I find nothing on his exam but a little bit of what we call mottling of his skin over here. A little bit of mottled skin. But I had this terrible feeling. So I said to him, you are going to the emergency room. Would you like your daughters to drive you, or shall I call 911? Knowing that he wouldn't go otherwise. So it turned out, after quite an argument, that his daughters drove him. And I called the emergency room, and I said to the doctor, something's going on with this man. The minute he gets in, you see him, the instant, something's happening here. There was not one idea in my mind. So I will fast forward this story. They were waiting. The doctor knew what that mottling meant. He had all the facts in his brain. They got the CAT scan. They got him up to the operating room table. The instant they opened him, his entire abdominal aorta burst open. Had this man stopped to go home, had we fought for another 3 minutes, he would have died. You cannot live through an experience like that. So the next day, my phone kept ringing. Everybody's calling me. Great pickup, Shanti. How did you remember this sign? And I can't even tell you today what the name of the sign is. I said, no, I didn't know anything. I kept telling everybody who called me. And they kept saying, no, but you must have known, and we would have missed it. And I thought to myself, how could I tell them? How could I ever share the story that what I learned through years of being at Stanford and through years of taking care of patients is that all of that knowledge is important. I don't want to miss a pneumonia or an appendicitis or that. But most of the time, most of the important things that I've known, most of the healing that has come through me, even when it's not about a ruptured abdominal aortic aneurysm, even when it's just somebody in pain because their child is sick or their marriage is dissolving or whatever it is, that everything important that I know about medicine, everything I have to give, comes straight from my having opened my heart to God and making that my practice, that I was blessed to know that what worship is, that what it means is opening our hearts to God. Sri Yukteswar, who was Yogananda's guru, who was what we call a jnana yogi, that means he taught and he studied, he was a scholar. He studied the teachings. He wrote books that most of us could never understand. And he said, you cannot take one step on the spiritual path without devotion. Swamiji and Master have said to us over and over, we all just, or many of us at Ananda, just got an email that was a transcription of a talk that Swami Kriyananda, who founded Ananda, gave on devotion. And I was just reading it this morning. It just came 2 weeks ago. And Swami says, there's nothing on the spiritual path that's more important than this practice of opening your heart. One cannot know God outside. It is not an outward experience. It is finding, as Asha said last week, I hope I get her words right, that point of inner perception that resides within each of us of all that is divine, of all that is real, of all that is true, of all that is the guidance that we need in our life. It's not in those 613 laws, no matter how hard we study them. And don't get confused. It's not that it's not wonderful to know it. It's not that it's not wonderful to have children who grow up and do good things in the world or to have perfect health. It's all wonderful. But it's not wonderful when we think that's the answer. I had a friend who asked me once, her child was a serious drug addict. And she said to me once, "What is the difference between codependency and just being a good mother?" And I said to her, "Only attachment. That's all." Only when we think that something outside is going to bring us what we want. That's exactly what takes us completely down the wrong path, or the realization that what we need is to learn how to go deeper and deeper, to trust that everything we need is already here. I recently had the privilege of reading a book by a man whose name is Rick Warren. We've been talking about him a little bit because he wrote a book called The Purpose-Driven Church. Rick Warren is the pastor at one of the largest churches in the United States. And it's a Christian church, but I haven't read anything that he's written yet that doesn't feel just, he could come here and he could talk and we would all be shaking our heads, yes. Beautiful man, really loves God and is very wise. And I read another book by him called The Purpose-Driven Life, which is a wonderful book. And he tells the story of Noah in this book differently than I've ever heard it. Now, you all know Noah's from the Old Testament, so I grew up hearing this story. Sunday school, we used to draw pictures of the ark and the animals. But I never understood this story, not the way he told it. He said, let's think about the story of Noah, this man who loved God, who worshiped God, who was so devoted to God that he made God smile all the time. That's what he said. And he was there at a time where God was feeling really pretty disappointed in many of the other people. So he comes to Noah one day, Noah who's living in the middle of a desert, who has never seen water, and he says, Noah, I'm unhappy with the way everything's going, but I really love you, and I feel your love for me. So I'm going to start all over with just you, but here's what you need to do. You need to build a boat, and here's exactly how you need to build this boat. Now remember, they're in the desert. They're hundreds of miles from the nearest water. Without a question, Noah starts doing what he has to do to be able to build this boat. You can imagine, it wasn't terribly easy finding the wood, finding not only the boat and building a boat in his front yard where everybody must have been thinking. I mean, it took him 120 years to build the ark. So it makes sense that he ran into some trouble along the way. Not the least of which is the people around him probably thought he was nuts. He's building a boat, and then he's collecting all of these animals, exactly the animals that God told him, without a question. He never questioned anything. He knew he was hearing the truth, and he just went about it. He didn't say to God, I don't know, I just want to make sure I'm getting this right. Let me meditate on it. Let me think about it for a while. Let me run it by some of my friends. Maybe I am nuts. No. He built the ark right in his front yard. And he got all of those animals. And he took care of them for 120 years while he was building the ark. It was no small thing. But he did it without a question. And we can ask ourselves, how many times in our life have we responded to anything with that kind of clarity and devotion, with our hearts so wide open that we knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that it was God talking to us. And without one question, we just went about doing what we were being asked to do. That's what Jesus was talking about. That's really what Moses was talking about. But the Jews didn't totally get it. And that's what we're being asked to do. Every Sunday, we have a service before service from 9 to 9:45. We have a purification ceremony. It is so beautiful. If you haven't come, please do. It just touches me so deeply every single week for years now. You come up in front of one of the ministers and you say these words, "I seek purification by the grace of God." In and of itself is so beautiful. It's such an act of that kind of surrender that doesn't weaken us but strengthens us. By the grace of God, that's what we're inviting. And the minister says, Swamiji's words, "Open your heart to me." The master says, "Open your heart to me, and I will enter and take charge of your life." It is such a beautiful promise. It just says to us, he doesn't say, "Go and get a great degree from Stanford and I'm going to have your back." You know, he doesn't say, "Make a lot of money." He doesn't even say, "Be a good person." He says, "Open your heart to me and I will enter and take charge of your life." Now we're all here. This is preaching to the choir. Everybody is in this church today because they want something. They want something in their lives that speaks to them, that touches their heart, that reminds us, all of us, that God is right with us. And here we have this simple line. There was a patient who I saw once, last little story, so perfect. I used to do all of the medical work in a local psychiatric hospital. And I was seeing this woman once, and I went to put my stethoscope on her heart, and she stopped me. Now, she was in a locked psychiatric hospital, very disturbed. And I said to her, "Janie, what's the problem?" She said to me, "I don't want you to listen." And I said, "Why not?" And she said to me, "You'll hear all of my secrets." It was so touching to me. I don't know how many years ago that was, more than 20. And when it came to me, when that story came to me yesterday, I thought to myself, really, in a way, I understand her, because she's right. When we listen carefully, we're listening with our heart, heart to heart. That's what listening means. That's what Jesus meant when he said, "For those who have ears to hear." He meant for those people, for those of you who have the courage and the faith and the trust that you will open your hearts. "I will enter and take charge of your life."